All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio for this Thursday, November 10th. Coming up this hour, Joe Zepecki helps us figure out the ups and downs of the roller coaster that was the 2022 campaign and its results. Coming up tomorrow, Senator Tammy Baldwin talks to us about asking the U.S. Department of Education to go after predatory private schools that forced students into unnecessarily expensive loans. We'll have Courier Newsroom political director Carolyn Fidler, former Chicago Tribune editor Mark Jacob, and UW Eau Claire athletic director Dan Schumacher. That's all on the show tomorrow. To reach us, the email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com, or you can call us 715-388-7155. You can follow us all day long, Up North News WI on social media, and upnorthnewswi.com is our website, where you can also sign up for our daily newsletter. And as I mentioned earlier, on the website, I will be posting an editorial later this morning about three takeaways from this week's election results, and then some things to watch for now that the election is past us. Amongst the reactions to the election, you have to include the winners and losers column from Dan Bice in the Journal Sentinel. And I'm going to start with one observation that was immediately pounced upon by a critic, basically, calling out the Wisconsin Elections Commission for the way that people were able to cheat and fraudulently obtain ballots. Now, in Dan Bice's view, it shouldn't have been that easy to get the fraudulent ballots, but it was. But that was pounced upon by one of my favorite people on Twitter, Jay Bullock, who also goes by the nickname Folk Bum. And he said through Twitter last night that Bice is infuriatingly wrong on the facts. He says the Elections Commission can only follow state law. They cannot make new laws saying what to require from people who request regular or military absentee ballots. That is spelled out in state statute, period. He notes that the people, Kimberly Zapata and Harry Waite, who fraudulently obtained ballots, could have gotten the same results mailing requests to clerks. Zapata could have gotten the same results walking into a clerk's office in person. And further, Bullock notes that the Wisconsin Elections Commission does not issue ballots. Any ballots sent in the name of fake soldiers or to Harry Waite's address were sent by local clerks who themselves were following the law. And Jay writes, look, I get that bashing the Elections Commission is the new hotness among Republicans, but the commission followed the law. If the law is flawed, there's nothing to blame the commission for. It's the notion of blaming the commission, he says, is incorrect and only fuels the one-sided election denialism that brought us January 6th and Tim Michaels, and that the whole provision shouldn't be there. Now, again, folks can agree or disagree with Jay or Dan Bice on that, but the fact remains we have had Republican control of the state legislature for 12 years. If there were flaws in election law before 2020 and Trump making all these wild claims about non-existent fraud, somebody could have caught it and fixed it. Frankly, that happens in legislative sessions every year, is that somebody sees something in state law and says, oops, that was an unintended consequence, or times have changed or technology has changed. And so, you know, they never get news headlines, but there are bills passed quite frequently that make these technical or cosmetic changes. And so if somebody noticed these, omissions, they could do something about it. Sometimes those changes, or rather those unintended consequences, are known on the front end. I'm sure at some point when it was decided that members of the military didn't have to show ID to require an absentee ballot, I am 100% certain that somebody at the time said, wait, that could lead to problems, but it went through anyway. And now, of course, that you can see somebody basically engaged in the crime of trying to use our military to prove fraud that doesn't exist. Now you have people saying, oh, well, the law is bad. The commission is bad. Well, no, just go and change the rules for the next time. There's nothing wrong with finding omissions and unintended consequences and repairing them. But that in no way, shape, or form tells you that the system itself is rife with fraud and therefore needs to be blown up. I mean, it appears that Doug La Follette wins a narrow victory as Secretary of State over the Republican Amy Laudenbach. But we knew what the worst case scenario was that La Follette loses, a Republican is in the Secretary of State's office, and then a Republican legislature and a Republican governor abolish the bipartisan Wisconsin Elections Commission, put far too much power into the hands of either the Secretary of State and or the legislature to make up election laws on a whim and decide certifications on a whim, allowing them to pick the winners and losers and overturn the will of the voters. They would have done it with the encouragement and approval of people like Ron Johnson, Tom Tiffany, Scott Fitzgerald, and others. All of that could have happened. But right now, the system has worked. The Wisconsin Elections Commission is following state law. And if it needs to be fixed, then it's time for Republicans in the legislature to actually work with Governor Evers and make our elections, which are already good, even better. We'll hear from Joe Zepecki coming up in our next segment. First, this break. This is Up North News Radio. Joe Zepecki joins us now. Hello, Joe.
How are you?
It's tired. We're all just tired.
Same.
But this is the life we have chosen. So we know this.
It's not for everybody.
No, it's definitely not. But for us weirdos who are involved in it, it always the roller coaster is always included. You know, the ups and the downs. Let me start with one of the ups for you. Governor Evers had said, since he won by 1.1%, you know, last time around, that he wanted to win by a landslide of 1.5. He's going to far surpass that, it looks like. Does that surprise everybody?
Two-term Tony, landslide Tony. I don't know what we call him now, but no, it was remarkable to see. And, you know, I don't think anybody should be too surprised. We always felt better about the position the governor was in. Voters in Wisconsin know this is a guy who is trying to do the right thing throughout COVID and the pandemic and all of the challenges that presented when it comes to preparing our kids for the future to realize their dreams and make the most of the opportunities put in front of them. This is a guy who is deeply committed to the people of Wisconsin. And I think what works in his favor more than anything is he's just not that political. He is not into the food fights. You see so many politicians today, you know, whether it's on Twitter or on cable news, trying to grab a headline. That's not Tony Evers' MO. And I think the people of this state appreciate that. They see that, and they rewarded him with that in a race that, you know, was not very competitive in the end. Tim Michaels really struggled in even what should have been Republican strongholds around the state, starting with Waukesha.
Yeah, and to the to that about Governor Evers and just being a real person, the initial editorial that I put on our website at upnorthnewswi.com, actually I used him and I used my friend State Senator Jeff Smith, known for all of his pop-up, you know, roadside mobile office hours, as two people who just want to have conversations and get things done. And it's not that everybody's going to be that way. Of course, there's political creatures, but the folks like Evers and like Jeff Smith, they're kind of that nice breath of fresh air we need now and then.
Yeah. And they turn the volume down at a time when we desperately need that, right? Times are so tough for so many people. And the last thing that those folks who are struggling to get by need are politicians shouting past one another. That's never been Governor Tony Evers' style, and I can't imagine it ever will be.
No. But he now goes into this second term. Obviously, the legislature will be Republican all the way through because of the way the maps have been rigged. Is there any reason at all to think that Republicans will, my words, grow up and maybe confirm the rest of his nominees and maybe look for win-wins together on the budget? Or it was that not a campaign act and obstruction is just in their DNA for these next 4 years?
I don't expect much different from Republicans than we've seen in the last 4 years. But I think that there's reason to be optimistic because we now have a road-tested governor who is going to be more effective at working with that legislature and around that legislature when he can in his next term. You know, despite that obstruction, Tony Evers was able to do a lot for Wisconsin families. He was able to get us back to two-thirds funding for public schools. He was able to cut taxes for the middle class. He was able to guide us through the pandemic in a way that other states did not have the success that we did in terms of getting shots in arms and all of that. So I think that with a full term under his belt, Governor Evers will be even more effective, despite the fact that he will still face opposition from the legislature. Listen, we're not going to be, you know, we're not Minnesota or Michigan where they have trifectas and we can, you know, pass every policy we want. But we have a proven, tested and trusted governor who I think will probably be even more effective in his second term than he was in his first.
I don't want to spend a lot of time with Ron Johnson. He's going to get 6 years to talk about Hunter Biden and everything else. So I just want to move past that, lest the listeners think I'm giving it all short shrift. But we know who he is and we know what he's going to be. I instead want to put the question to you this way. Mandela Barnes fell short, but he remains one of Wisconsin's young leaders. He inspired a lot of people from Moms for Mandela to all kinds of other local folks around the state. My advice to him and to all these people that came around him was not to walk away. We're still going to need, you know, a new generation of leadership from him, from Sarah Godlewski, from, you know, Rebecca Cook, who ran for Congress and all of that. Does Johnson's victory make it harder for us to ask those folks to all stick around and stay involved?
I can't imagine that will be the takeaway. And you talked about the candidates and the former candidates, and that's all well-deserved and well-earned, and I agree with every word of what you said. And I want to talk about the new generation that roared a mighty roar at the polls this week. The youngest voters, Gen Z, man, the kids are all right. Tony Evers does not have a three-point win without young people. Mandela Barnes does not make up the ground that he did from all of the polls. And in spite of all of the pundits and prognosticators who wrote him off, and Josh Call does not get another term as attorney general without young people. They know what is at stake. They are in this fight. And I cannot imagine that they will be disheartened to the point where they opt out. And that's a good thing, right? You and I have been around long enough to know that midterm elections, when one party controls the White House and all of Congress, that does not usually go well. And the sort of like the echo effect on that can be sometimes those people who get engaged get pretty devastated by the outcome. This was a good night for Democrats nationally. There are important victories that progressives had across Wisconsin. I hope that every young person who opted in to the system, who got engaged in this process that is so central to who we are, see that change is possible, that progress is possible, and appreciate the fact that in Mandela Barnes, for just one example, they saw somebody from their generation. They saw somebody who is very different than what we come to expect from the United States Senate, which is an old boys millionaires club, and it has been for far too long. He didn't get all the way there this time, but that is a fellow with a bright future. And I hope that the people who opted in because of him stay engaged, stay motivated. And I have no doubt that that's exactly what Mandela is going to tell any single one of them he encounters in the days, weeks, months, and years ahead.
There were plenty of critics of Democratic positions or priorities. A lot of people saying, oh, there's way too much of a focus on social issues and abortion rights and things. And people just want to talk about the economy. But Tony Evers did talk about the economy. He did put out a Main Street bounce back plan. And it seems to me that this kind of tells those folks the conventional wisdom should be that the Democratic Party can walk and chew gum at the same time, talking about issues of economics and issues of basic human fairness.
Oh, exactly. And listen, and they're inextricably linked, right? Healthcare is an economic issue, right? Raising kids, choosing to have a family is an economic issue. We see that all the time, and we've seen it acutely in just the last few years. So I think the it's nice, you know, and easy and simple for people to sort of pretend that those are two different buckets between cultural issues and economic issues. The reality is it's all wrapped up together. It's a part of your identity. It's a part of your hopes and your dreams and what you hope to accomplish in this life and what you want to leave behind for your kids and the, you know, the sort of the next generation. And so my hat is off to all of the Democrats who ran in this cycle. This is a tough time to be a candidate, to put yourself out there. And it's a scary time when you look at some of the things that Republicans have proposed. So the fact that we had such strong candidates, not just statewide, you know, you look at the state legislature and folks like Byrd in the 84th Assembly District, mm-hmm. people who just gave of themselves and gave of their time to put themselves out there. There is so much to be proud of and so much good to take away, even from the races that we came up a little short in this week.
Well, and I don't want to oversell it. I don't want to give people false hope for 2 years from now. But if I were to have conversations with any of those folks who ran like in assembly districts and therefore could do it 2 years from now, I would say to them, you know, 2 years from now, Tammy Baldwin's going to be on the ballot. 2 years from now will be a presidential year where turnout is even higher. And so don't take this year's setback as reason to say all is lost. Again, I don't want to overpromise 2024, but there will be a different dynamic there too.
Well, I'm going to quote my old boss, Mr. Barack Obama, and the unlikely story that is America, there has never been anything false about hope, Pat. And in 2024, we are going to have another good year. We're going to have a lot of turnout. We're going to have a lot of excitement. You know, it's the part of the argument that often gets left out is none of these elections decide the future, not in a vacuum and not on their own. The work continues, the struggle continues. And, you know, listen, if I were a betting man, I would bet that if Republicans do take control of the House, they're going to overreach. They're going to overplay their hand in a way that's going to hurt them. It's going to strengthen President Biden and Democrats broadly. The fact that the former guy, former President Trump, is going to announce he's running for president in the next week or two is going to, you know, maybe deliver us a Senate seat in Georgia. And yeah, there's a long way to go between now and then. But I think the clear message across the country last night was Republicans have a Trump problem. Democrats are not without flaw. We are not without our own challenges as a party, but Republicans are an absolute disaster of a political party right now. And it's showing up in all kinds of races in all kinds of places.
And if Democrats at the national level can learn anything, it's to look at people like Leanne Spicer in rural Wisconsin, Brad Paff in a rural congressional district, Katrina Shanklin beating expectations, and say, we are very thankful for everybody that turned out in Wisconsin cities, but there's a whole lot more territory of Wisconsin that we can put in play, but you got to come play in it.
Exactly. And for me, the Tim Ryan is an example of that. That's the tone that you got to put forward and you got to be authentic. You know, I've known Tim for a long time, more than 20 years, and that's who he was. That he wasn't putting anything on, you know, that was not a front. That's who he is. All of these candidates across the state have to be authentic. They have to represent their communities. I thought we did a really nice job of recruiting candidates and getting folks to step up and run who did reflect their communities. We have to continue that. I certainly hope we see some of these folks who came up a little short stay engaged, stay locked in, and give it another shot next time.
Joe Zepecki, thank you so much. Get some rest. We'll talk again soon.
You too. Bye-bye.
So as we look ahead, and we'll do more of this after the break, we have to ask what is going to be the influence of Donald Trump on Republican candidates in 2024? Will there be an influence? Will it be as strong as ever? Paul Ryan emerged from wherever he's been lately to weigh in, and to no surprise, he's still not a fan of Trump, and he'll talk about it if you put a microphone in front of him. Here's WISN TV getting an interview with him.
Searching and, you know, head scratching and looking through and parsing the numbers as to why we didn't perform as well as we would have liked to have.
Why do you think it is?
I mean, I think Trump's kind of a drag on our ticket. I think Donald Trump gives us problems politically We lost the House, the Senate, and the White House in 2 years when Trump was on the ballot or in office. And I think we just have some Trump hangover. I think he's a drag on our offices and our race.
Okay. Again, I said it last hour as well. I mean, he is the ultimate dog that will bark at you and bark until you actually approach him and then just scamper away. So nice again to hear from Paul Ryan that, you know, Trump is not a good influence, but I don't think we'll be hearing from Paul Ryan again for a little while here. More about where do we go from here on the other side of this break. This is Up North News Radio.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kranklin. Been flying solo for so
long. A little bit of Old Dominion there as they tipped their caps, or I guess their cowboy hats, to Alabama at the CMAs last night. Let's talk about some takeaways of what we've learned from the election and what we can watch. But, you know, why start with me when there are people smarter than me out there, like, you know, Robert and West Allis, that can tell us what kind of lessons we should glean from all of this. Robert, what are you thinking?
Good morning. Obviously, I was happy it went better than expected. You know, when I look at the Senate race, I feel like it was very winnable. When I look at the way Fetterman handled Oz versus the way the Barnes campaign handled, you know, Ron Johnson, it just seemed Fetterman never let the guy get up. You know, he was constantly attacking him on several issues. Whereas the Barnes campaign, I mean, we were running ads where we're making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, introducing the candidate rather than actually making the election a referendum on Johnson. The other piece I thought where we lost it a little bit is we didn't actually have people vote in the primary, right? We all kind of folded up around Barnes. And I think if we had had that primary, that might have made the difference. We might have had more registered voters actually going to the polls on election day. That would have got people kind of in the cycle of coming out. And, you know, it just seems to me the Democratic Party is always looking for the silver bullet. You know, they thought they had their abortion issue, and that was what they were going to run with. Things to talk about, and there was so much material to go after something with. So I hope we've learned that lesson, that we shouldn't...
Yeah. Thank you, Robert. Appreciate it. Before the call kind of got dropped there. I also, along those lines, wanted to note another element from Dan Bice's winners and losers column. And he took aim at what he called the oh so friendly Democratic primary, where the other candidates dropped out before election day, that in his view, it didn't do Mandela Barnes any favors. As a result, Barnes came across as unvetted and unprepared when Johnson and his allies unleashed their attack ads. Bice would rather see primaries that look more like real elections and less like high school reunions. And that's fair. But as we all know, it's also possible to have a primary that is so bloody that the eventual nominee comes out not ready to take on their opponent in the general election. In the case of the Barnes campaign, I think he was absolutely right to begin by introducing himself to Wisconsin voters. It's just that, and again, this is, you know, Thursday morning quarterbacking, you have to make that pivot at some point and not just be biographical, but talk about what you are going to do if elected, and then again, go on offense against your opponent. And in this case, there's so much material from Ron Johnson, and we talked about it here repeatedly, but I didn't hear nearly enough of it. And I think I know what was going to be happening here, that the candidate and the campaign were going to try to stay on the high road and then depend on the outside groups, the allies, to basically carpet bomb with everything wrong with Ron Johnson. But then that's kind of out of your control. You don't know what their message is going to be. You can't coordinate with them. You don't know how effective it's going to be. And it didn't help Barnes look, you know, he was obviously trying not to look too aggressive. He wanted to be just like any of us who wouldn't necessarily be slinging mud. But again, it's Ron Johnson. He just gives you so much to work with. And I think plenty of people wonder that if either Barnes and or national groups had done just a little bit more would that have overcome the just 27,000 votes that was the margin that allow us the privilege of having Ron Johnson for six more years? Mark in Prairie du Sac, good morning. What lessons did you glean from all of this?
Burden rather than privilege. And I agree. I mean, they could have gone after Ron Johnson for him being an insurrectionist supporter, for being involved in the fake electors thing, for voting against the burn pit bill that's going to help so many veterans out, you know, the veterans that are poisoned at our bases. I mean, it's just, but getting back to your point about the Elections Commission, let's remember this Election Commission was formed up by a Republican legislature as a replacement for a group that, you know, uncovered Scott Walker's, you know, felonies and misdemeanors that, of course, they changed under the Supreme Court. That after he said, well, this is unconstitutional, even though it was declared constitutional before, the rules on coordination of campaigns. And now the continuing assault on our election process by the Republicans. Pure and simple, I do not know for a fact that Janelle Branchen wasn't involved in the planning of this most recent thing where the woman requested a military ballot. She received those ballots. And you can commit a crime. You know, our laws are not intended to keep people from committing crimes. Perhaps not saying that quite correctly.
Oh no, but no, I mean, you're right. Just because something's against the law, you know, and you break the law, that just proves you broke the law. Not that the law is wrong.
Yeah, it is just remarkable to me that the continued assault on our elections, including elections that they win, they assault they complain about the elections, Paul Ryan is right, even though Paul Ryan is a, you know, that I have no respect at all for Paul Ryan, a man who went to school at Social Security as well as his mother did, survivor mm-hmm. benefits, now is an assault on Social Security. I mean, it is just, and the other thing they could have hammered Ron Johnson on. I mean, I would have made seniors scared to vote for Ron Johnson because he's going to try to take the Social Security away, of which I'm collecting Social Security now. Yeah. I mean, it is just disgusting that the Republicans are not getting called out in the press, the supposedly free press, and condemned for their continued assaults on democracy. This is pure and simple that none of them have come out and condemned Donald Trump for what his behavior has been. They're afraid to do that. Why they're...
Yeah, exactly, Mark. Thank you so much. Sorry, didn't mean to step on you there, but I was about to make you even angrier. I hope you don't mind my doing this. But again, from Dan Bice's column, and I was floored, and this is going to make every conservative happy to hear how angry this next part of Dan Bice's column made me. But he said, amongst the winners and losers, somebody named Chris LaCivita. Never heard of him? That's the way he likes it. LaCivita is one of those responsible for swift voting former Senator John Kerry in 2004, and he was a general consultant for the Ron Johnson campaign. He had the difficult task, Bice writes, of figuring out how a candidate who spent the last 6 years making himself the most polarizing figure in Wisconsin could beat somebody young, gregarious, and affable. LaCivita's three-pronged program is simply this: attack, attack, attack. And that's what Johnson's campaign did. Johnson had very little to say about what he hopes to accomplish in the next 6 years, but Johnson and his allies had much to say about Barnes's ideas. The plan did very little to lower Johnson's negatives, but it had just enough of an impact on Mandela Barnes's reputation to help Johnson squeak through for a third term. And I have used that term swift voting privately, by and large, to talk about what was done to Mandela Barnes. I had no idea until this column by Dan Bice that the guy responsible for the original swift voting, one of the lowest moments in American politics, helped out one of the and helped result in one of the lowest campaigns that we will ever see in Wisconsin history. Tom and McFarland, we're talking about lessons gleaned from the elections. How are you this morning?
Good, thank you. And it goes back to what I've always meant, that Democrats are great at governing but are lousy at politics. With Ron Johnson, and I have written the Mandela campaign to ask them on this, take you back to the opening years of the Trump administration when he started his trade war, and how Wisconsin farmers took that on the chin, especially the dairy farmers. In fact, in the 2 years that the Republicans had full control, we saw more small family farms in Wisconsin fold and get absorbed by agribusiness than in the previous 40 years combined as a direct result of that trade war that Johnson championed. So you run an ad in rural Wisconsin reminding the farmers that the reason why they lost their farm was because of Ron Johnson policies. I think that would have made up your 30,000 votes right there. Why we didn't hear anything about that during the campaign, you know, it's just, it boggles my mind. There's so much, like you said, there's so much that we could have attacked Johnson on, and they did not. You can't run a race in nowadays against Republicans and not go on the attack.
Exactly. Tom, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And then, you know, in terms of my own takeaways from it, look, first off, despite everything that you just heard from all of us who are unhappy with the results of the Mandela Barnes Ron Johnson race, the first takeaway from this is that Wisconsin Democrats are stronger than many people expected. Evers is the state's first Democratic incumbent to win election during a Democratic president's midterm, apparently since 1962. He not only bested his 1.1% win over Scott Walker, he sent Tim Michaels back to Connecticut with a more than 3% margin of victory. That's a landslide by Wisconsin standards. And Democrats continue to rack up wins in statewide contests, with the exception of the state treasurer's race this year. And despite maps rigged to the point where an impartial court would consider them criminal, Democrats were still able to deny Republicans the legislative supermajority that would have allowed the Republicans to override Evers' vetoes and control every aspect of state government. And so in what was supposed to be a red tide year, our erratic incumbent Republican senator came within a whisker of being unseated. Now, Ron Johnson only won the third term that he promised he wouldn't seek and was able to hold off Mandela Barnes thanks to tens of millions of dollars put in by billionaires, making ads that immediately earned a place in state lore for their blatant racism and scare tactics. At no point did Johnson talk about actual achievements, and we don't expect any for the next 6 years. But Democrats can hold their heads high and turn their attention toward the races yet to come, which include a presumptive third-term effort from Tammy Baldwin in 2024. Takeaway number two, all politics is local. Foxconn was a Hail Mary thrown by Scott Walker in 2018, an acknowledgement that he could not keep his promise to create jobs at a certain level across Wisconsin. So Tony Evers used a different playbook, allocating American Rescue Plan funds in a way that went directly to main streets and targeted industries in all 72 counties, rather than a single recipient to a foreign-owned corporation. Perhaps the best-known example of this all politics is local would be those Main Street Bounce Back Grants. 10,000 small businesses around the state getting $10,000 each. Now, that $100 million investment sounds like a lot, but $100 million pales in comparison to the more than $3 billion that Walker and Republican legislators were willing to hand over to Foxconn. Similarly, the Democrats around the state that focused on local messages while Republicans were trying to echo national themes with negative messages about crime and social issues, those Democrats were well received. Some of them, like State Senator Jeff Smith, were able to squeak out a thin margin of victory. Others, like Assembly candidate Luann Byrd in suburban Milwaukee, came within just a few hundred votes of winning, even with rigged maps. Democrats know, talk local about local benefits. And that leads to takeaway number three. Voters want candidates who can walk and chew gum. There were critics who said Democrats should not focus so sharply on abortion rights or protecting democracy because economic issues were frequently at the top of public opinion polls. But results around the country showed that voters want to see public officials be supportive of good economic measures while also protecting their medical privacy and their right to vote freely. Single-issue campaigns send a message that a candidate is fixated on ideology rather than being a full-service public servant. And then finally, some things to watch for. can Republicans agree to finally grow up, work with the governor, and find a win-win for the surplus? It was unconscionable that there were so many school referenda on the ballot this year when there's $5 billion that can go toward tax cuts and making smart investments. Next, let's look for more progressive outreach to rural Wisconsin. I'll again reference that New York Times Magazine cover story about it. And the third thing to watch for, decisions about 2024 are all going to be made in the not too distant future. We'll wrap up today's conversation coming up after this break. This is Up North News Radio.
California, maybe she'd fall for a boy from South Georgia. She's
I thought this was so cool hearing that Cole Swindell song. I had not heard it till the CMAs last night. Paying homage to the old Jody Messina tune, and then to have her come up. And I'll try to remember to hear from her at the end of the segment here. It is still 65 degrees up here on Lake Wissota, and it's going to be 25. About this time tomorrow, we're going to tumble 40 degrees. Folks on the other side of the state are going to tumble about 30 degrees because you're about 10 degrees cooler out there. That cold front is coming through today, and it's coming through hard. So be ready for tomorrow morning and beyond. Tom in LA, thanks for joining us. What's on your mind about the election results and lessons we can glean from them?
Yeah, good morning, Pat. First off, we the people means government. And I think that we all need to know that. So when Republicans talk bad about government, they're really talking about we the people. And that's our tax dollars that goes towards government. So therefore, people, please remember that. Second, in terms of the election, I just think we need to, as we move forward here, we need to become the Freedom Party. We need to become the FDR Party once again. We need to become FDR Democrats. We need to, right from the get-go, we should be talking about money and politics and how this is actually ruining our government and how it has ruined our government since Citizens United. We have got to go on the offense with these things. We cannot be playing defense. Prevent defense prevents you from winning. And we have to remember that we're Democrats, man. I mean, we are FDR Democrats. FDR won 4 terms, and he won because he spoke to all of the Americans. He didn't speak and say, oh, this is just for progressives, or this is just for Democrats. He talked in terms of this is what's for Americans, and we should be saying that. We should be saying that these are Medicare for All is wanted by 70% or more people in this country. College tuition, free college tuition, is wanted by more than 70% of the people in this country. Why we are not picking out the policy issues and pointing out that these are American policies that people want, I don't understand. So, and I also think that there's something to be said by all people like to be led by those more competent than they are. We need someone that's going to be a leader and say, this is the way we have to do things. Just like John Fetterman did. John Fetterman ran a very, very American type campaign where he actually brought all Americans into the tent and said, yeah, we're going to help you get that job. Yeah, we're going to help you with your Medicare for All. So I just think that we really need to start, not pointing fingers about who it was that did what and all that kind of stuff, but we as Democrats need to start becoming the Freedom Party, because a necessitous person is not a free person. And we need to have these programs in line that we the people pay for. Not paying for military industrial complex, but actually paying for we the people who pay the taxes back to us, that we have something to go forward with. And I would also say, go on offense right now, AG Merrick Garland. You know what? Start looking into investigations on Ron Johnson, because he's going to start looking into investigations on everything. And if we if we start right out of the gate, say, look, you know what? Hey, we're basically going to go after you for being in Russia on July 4th, 2018. If all you're going to do is, stonewall and, investigation after investigation on everybody else. So I just think we need to definitely you know, kind of pop them in the mouth. Not violently, of course, but we need to put them in their place and say, look, we're the Freedom Party. We're the party that you want to follow.
Yeah, you know? It's the old Harry Truman thing, you know, when they called him Give Him Hell Harry. Is like, I don't give him hell. I just tell the truth, and they think it's hell. So, Tom, thank you very much for that. It's definitely words to live by, and definitely want to keep an eye on Merrick Garland and the U.S. Department of Justice, because we know that Republicans will probably take the House with a slim majority, but a majority just the same. We don't know how crazy things are going to get over there in terms of, will there be attempts at investigations or impeachments or what have you. The January 6th committee will have to wrap up its work, but the U.S. Department of Justice will still be there. And will we see anything now that the election has passed and before a Republican House tries to hamstring the U.S. Department of Justice? So while a lot of us will be thinking about taking it easy now that the elections are over and the holiday season is upon us, I hope that's not the mindset over at the U.S. Department of Justice. You know, we were so busy with Election Day Tuesday, we didn't even note the Milwaukee Bucks are no longer an undefeated basketball team. They were the last undefeated team to start the season, but lost to Atlanta on Monday. Now, last night in Oklahoma City, they had to go to double overtime while they were shorthanded. Javon Carter had a career high of 36 points, and the shorthanded Milwaukee Bucks were able to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder 136-132 in double overtime on Wednesday night. The Bucks were missing Giannis Antetokounmpo, who had to sit out with a sore left knee. Drew Holiday was out with a sprained right ankle. And so thankfully, that void was fixed by Javon Carter, who made 15 of 27 field goals, including 5 of 10 three-pointers. So that really worked out well for the Bucks. Brooke Lopez added 24 points. And let's see, where are they going next? They visit San Antonio. They play the Spurs tomorrow, and then the Badger basketball team, I've mentioned previously, but I still think it's really unique that they're going to be playing at American Family Field tomorrow. The roof will be closed, of course, but they'll be in Milwaukee. The women's team playing Kansas State at 3:30, the men playing Stanford at 6:30. So a very unique time in sports. And we're going to get a different kind of perspective on sports and what to look for during the weekends starting tomorrow from an unlikely new sportscaster. His name is Dan Schumacher, and folks around the WIAC would know that, because he's the athletic director at UW-Eau Claire. But he's also a friend here living up on Lake Wasota. And on a lark, I said to him, because we find ourselves at the same watering hole, and he is part of the reason you have a saying called, he likes to talk big at the bar. And so at the bar one time, I said, you know, you ought to come on every so often. How about if we have you on Fridays and we just talk about, you know, what kind of sports to watch for, not just the pro stuff, but, you know, what about the WIAC? What's happening in college sports around Wisconsin and maybe even high school as well? And I thought that he'd back down and go, no, I can't go on radio. No, of course not. He said, yeah, when do I start? Well, he starts tomorrow. So during this segment, tomorrow will be a test run for sportscaster Dan Schumacher from UW-Eau Claire to talk about what to look for in Wisconsin sports. And since the guy is up here from Chicago, and you'll definitely hear it from him, Cubs fan, huge fan of the Grateful Dead, we will not just be talking about sports. I can pretty much guarantee you that. So hopefully we get to have some little fun, with a friend tomorrow, along with hearing from Senator Tammy Baldwin and Mark Jacob and Carolyn Fiddler. So that'll do it for us. All right, go have fun. Work hard, play hard, enjoy the day. Follow me at Pat Kreitlow Up North on Facebook, Pat Kreitlow on Twitter, and Up North News WI on social media. And we'll see you Friday.